Thank you so much for coming down to the greenhouse. Just to make sure that you're in the right place, this is for drummers, craft and creativity, right on, okay? And my name is David Zimmer. I figure it's not quite 2:30, but we might as well just jump in and see if we can cover a lot of stuff. You have outlines. I don't know for sure if I'm going to go through the outline or if we're going to just kind of talk about things that pop up, but it's there just that we can refer to it. And then this packet, I think, is on its way. And I really think you're going to want to take this with you if these come. If not, we can copy these and hand them out. Raise your hand if you were at my intensive yesterday. How are you enjoying the free iPads I handed out? Good. Good. I knew you'd love them. No, that was a lot of fun. We just really in depth jumped into this. Yeah, sure. This packet. Some of the stuff we talked about in our intensive, seeing as there's a lot more people here. Just some groove ideas and fill ideas. But before we get started, let me just briefly tell you who I am. We don't have a ton of time, so I want to cover the bases. But my name is David Zimmer. I started playing drums when I was in high school. I started playing jazz up in Seattle, Washington, where I'm born and raised. And I was a heavy jazz drummer for about 4 years, and then the Lord saved me when I was a senior in high school. So I moved down to California so I could go to the Master's College and Grace Community, where a couple of friends and I, we formed the band Enfield. And through Enfield, we started playing for these things called the Resolved Conferences. And we did that for 7 years. Through that, we met CJ, and we met Bob, and so we formed a relationship. And you know, to see how excited Bob is about local church ministry and taking worship seriously in the church, not only just lyrically and lyrical content, but also musicality and creativity. You know, when you listen to their records, they are, you know, attempting to be creative and exciting. And so it was a match from the start, getting to work with him and Sovereign Grace Ministries. So me and our bass player from Enfield, Ryan, and Ryan, we both have played on I think the past 7 Sovereign Grace albums. Not like the last two, but before those, and that's been a blast. Through that, we've been doing a lot of Worship God conferences. So we did 2 on the West, and we've been doing some on the East. I recognize a couple of you, which is really awesome, that you keep coming back to get trained and to serve faithfully in your church is awesome. So while during my time in Los Angeles and in Enfield, we just had a heart for church music, for church ministry, so we started making our own albums in Enfield. And serving in the college ministry at Grace Community. Through that, I am now a full-time just freelance musician. So I do a lot of studio work, live sessions, a little bit of teaching on the side, and clinics like this for churches, for church worship teams that just kind of want to build their church drummers that want to build their arsenal of groove ideas, fill ideas, and resources. So that's kind of like in a big room like this that I want to throw out some general things that I'm working on that are a lot of fun for anywhere between someone who just started playing and advanced players. I do, even though we don't have a ton of time, I do want to keep this super informal. So anytime there's a question, I think it just will serve the group to just raise your hand and ask a question, and then maybe we can formulate a dialogue between ourselves. I obviously don't have all the answers, and but I'm hoping that some of these resources can serve you guys in your context. Yeah. Is there a second page? Yeah. Actually, not taking any more questions. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just messing with you. I'm totally messing. No, yeah, it's on the back. And then hopefully we can potentially get these packets. But just to start off the bat, is there anyone in here who has been playing less than 3 months in your local church? Okay, good. Less than 5 months. Nice, okay. Less than a year. Okay, great. I have a book for you. It's called Accents and Solos for Rock and Jazz Drumming. Yeah, I think you'll definitely enjoy it. Okay. What's that? No. Yeah, it is. It was a test. You passed. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay. So, are there any questions just to start? Not to put anybody on the spot, but yeah.
Where are those effects coming from? Beautiful sound, like,
oh, thanks.
I don't remember what song it was, but like,
yeah.
Start off with the snare sound completely different. Are you controlling that? Is that the sound guy? How's that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, it was the loop. Yeah. No. So there's two things. There's two things going on. This is a company called Big Fat Snare Drum, and they make these rings for the snare that are super cool. There's like four. They sell four of these, and basically it's just to get that real deep thuddy snare sound. And this one comes with these tambourine like jinglers already fastened to them. So I just thought that's super sick. And I think these are only like $25 or $50. $35. I'm like, I have all the right answers. So not qualified to be standing on this stage. But yeah, so there's this. And it really works on deeper, fattier drums. We're talking like 5-inch, 6-inch drums. Because we're getting that thud sound, sometimes on these thin drums, it sounds really thin. This one's not that bad. So it's a combination of just hitting it, which you're getting some of those jingles, as opposed to hitting the snare drum by itself. Right? And then it's just an effect of like a delay effect. So honestly, just what it is are just eighth notes, or you could call them 16th notes, and 2E and A, just playing 2E and A. So instead of and A, I'm creating the strike, the downbeat, and then the E and A are lowering in volume. And the only way to really achieve that is the time has to be consistent on that delay. If it rushes, you know, then it's distracting. If it drags, then it's distracting too. So lining that up with a metronome, just simple 16th notes. Same with the foot. Yeah, that Chariots of Fire thing. That's the idea, yeah. Yeah. And then I have a sizzle up here, which is just an old Zildjian symbol that's been drilled into and has just one of these pegs that sizzles. You can, at Guitar Center, you can buy beads that, you know, attach to the top of the bell and things like that. But this also fills some of that tonal landscape as well. So it feels like everything is kind of blending together. Yeah, that's the idea for that. Yeah. It's what I really try to communicate in some of these clinics are just the importance of rudiments and how rudiments come out in your drumming when you're looking for new fills, when you're looking for new groove ideas. The only place we're going to get these are from rudiments. I mean, you can hear drummers do something cool and you go, oh, I want to steal that. I dig that. But a lot of the creativity that you're going to come up with on your own are going to come from rudimental books. So I push as hard as I can. Stick Control by George Lawrence Stone. Just because our packets haven't come, if you have a pen or a phone or something, just write these books down. And then come and find me, and I'll get you a packet, because I want to make sure that we all have one. So I'm just going to read them off. It's George Lawrence Stone, or just Stone. It's called Stick Control, and it's basically a book just full of rudiments. Eighth notes, 16th notes, and we're going to talk a little bit about them today to give you just a little bit of a context. And then a really great book that we'll talk about today also is called Triplets Around the Drums by Paul Capozzoli. How you spell that is Capozzoli. You can Google these, Amazon these. They're really cheap books on Amazon. But that's called Around the Drums with Triplets. He's got multiple series, like Around the Drums with Paradiddles, Triplets, Single Around the Drums with Rolls, Open Rolls, Closed Rolls and stuff. Just killer resources. Because, you know, the hardest thing I think that drummers struggle with are just filling around the drums. Finding creative fills, something that transcends just using our hands with eighth notes, quarter notes, you know, kind of getting stuck in that world. And what we talked about in the intensive yesterday for a long time was just filling around the drums, using the kick drum to fill with instead of just using our hands. And I want to talk on that really quick. So not even thinking rudiments, because we can get into rudiments, singles, doubles, paradiddles, but utilizing the kick in whatever you're doing, whether it's a triplet or it's a single stroke. Oh, are those packets? Sweet. Hey, you could just like go run and get those if you want to. And I'll just keep talking. Utilizing the kick drum with our hands. So I think it's a very typical fill for people to just fill on the drums with their hands instead of their feet. Here's some examples. A very popular fill. And maybe that's the only place that you sit on Sundays or Wednesdays. It's just not getting comfortable using our foot. It's like, I don't know what to use my foot with instead of one, three, and, you know, or one, two, three, four, one. But as I've been kind of teaching drummers and working with different drummers from different churches, I've kind of created this fill I like to call the 3-4-5 that has been kind of useful, and it's a series of a triplet, and then 16th notes between the hand and the feet, okay? So it's, and it's the easiest way to think about it is just right, left kick, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and you go down the drums, okay? So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, all right? And then we have 4, which will be 1, 2, kick, kick. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right? And then we have 5, which is going to be 1, 2, 3, kick, kick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? So we don't want to think of it as necessarily like, oh, this is the fill I'm going to do when I'm grooving, like, you know, but it's to kind of open up this world of hand and feet together. Does that make sense? Okay. I'll explain more of that, but here's how it sounds. So it's, make sense? Okay. Sounded like 16s. Yeah. It's not, it's actually not in a time signature. It's just a grouping of notes. Does that make sense? So it's just a grouping of 5 notes. If you want to think of it as a time signature, it's kind of an over the bar line figure, but you can fit 3 series of 5 notes in a 4-4 bar. So like, as 16ths. In a bar of 4, yeah. But that's again talking about strictly for filling. I'm not necessarily talking about how to incorporate like a five note fill into a groove as much as I am just a great hand and foot exercise. Right? So if we're in 4-4, this would be that group of 3 sets of 5. Or, so there was 3 of them. Right? But that's like, I don't necessarily think we would use that. You know, but we're really talking about, hey, let's get out of just our hands. Let's get our feet involved. Okay, so again, that 3-4-5. Okay, and then how do we kind of take that to the next level? I mean, I think if anybody sat down on these drums, you could slowly figure that out. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. So after kind of grooving with that, now the idea is to translate that around the drums. So maybe, but we talked a lot about yesterday, like, don't play the same drum twice. So maybe it's 1, 2, 3, you move your left hand to the hi-hat. And we just begin to formulate this circular pattern. Now, this is kind of advanced, but if it's something that we can all start slow, we can build up from that. But the idea is, now it's opening up these opportunities. Now let's talk about the filling aspect of it. Now it opens up these opportunities that we can actually use our kick drum in the context of fills. Triplets. doubles, those doubles. And then with that fast kick, how I'm getting that fast kick, it's just my toe is up, so my heel's not down. There's a lot of kind of different opinions on this, but I've always played with my toe up and do this thing called the Picaro push, where you just start at the back of the pedal and you just slowly push forward. That's how I get those quick doubles. It's just like in sports when they tell you to be on your toes, you know? Stay on your toes and be light-footed instead of heavy-footed on your heels. I've just gotten more just quickness just being on my toes. So when I'm doing those fast doubles, that's where that's coming from. You just want to make sure that you don't dig that beater into the head, okay? Okay, if you have your packet, this falls right in line with what we're talking about. Again, sorry for the yesterday people. Yeah. Oh, it is gone? Oh, okay, we're bringing more, I think, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Turn to page 5 in your packet. This is from that book, Around the Drums with Triplets. Is anybody familiar with what these notes are? Just raise your hand. Yeah? Page 5. Who would like to come up here and play this? Try it? All right, come on up. Hey, give him a hand for being so brave. This is going to be our high tom. It's not marked. It's going to be high snare kick. So, So, 2 on the high tom, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
almost. Triplets between the kick and the high tom. Kick right left on that high tom. Kick right left. Yeah, very close. Good. Good. Awesome. Hey, give him a hand. Okay, anyone else want to come up and try it? Yeah. Yeah, 5.
High tom snare?
Yeah.
I go snare, yeah. And then that's floor tom?
Floor tom, yeah.
Okay, so back to the top.
Yeah. Nice, good. Awesome. I like volunteers. Oh, take it. Yeah, good. Good. Okay, awesome. So yeah, so what we're accomplishing are triplets around the drums, okay? So that top line are high tom, that middle line snare drum, that bottom line's floor tom, okay? So we're going 1, 2, 3, 4, okay? And then number 14, as we played, is 1, 2, 3, 4, okay? The idea with this triplets around the drums is now like we were talking about before, anybody can sit down and play those triplets just by counting them out, right? Where it gets really exciting is when we're adding dynamics, we're increasing the speed, and then we're translating that to other drums. And that's kind of the headspace that I want you guys to be in. So we kind of get stuck, I think sometimes, just in being comfortable with what we're used to, right? The one beat that we play every Sunday, you know? The one go-to fill that we use every time. You know, whether that's just hands, you know, or maybe it's more complicated, you know, but I want to get outside of that and see how we can use this kick. This kick brings this sort of, you know, linear, really cool interaction between limbs, between hands and feet. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I would always practice it on your own until you felt like you were comfortable to maybe do it in a rehearsal. And then, but it has to be something that is second nature. You know, it has to be something that kind of flows out of you. You know, we were talking yesterday again about a lot of rudiments and a lot of complicated patterns and techniques. That it's like, well, how often am I going to use this on a Sunday or a Wednesday? And it's just like a guitar player building dexterity and scales. It's just like a piano player building dexterity with scales. It's the same exact thing. We're building dexterity with our hands, between our hands and our feet. And that's where a lot of creativity comes from, you know? If we feel comfortable with playing, you know, eighth notes on the hi-hat, why can't we play eighth notes on the snare drum? That's something different, you know, or alternating every single time. You know, like, simple things that we do kind of all the time, but we're now kind of flipping on its head and trying something else. And I think where these triplets get, like, just awesome, like my favorite fill, is when we take it out of the kind of the book world and we start to kind of apply it in an actual setting. So, you know, triplets without dynamics are just, you know, straight across the board. You add those dynamics, so we're counting these as one and a. Maybe the and is loud and the is silent. So maybe it's, right? Maybe the is accented and the and is silent. Right? So now we're getting into like accent world. And then where this gets just really awesome is you flip it on its head of not just using the drums, what we did with that 3-4 exercise, 3-4-5 exercise, but now you're translating that fill to different drums, right? So now becomes, accents too. You're choosing where you want those accents to fall. And now it sounds like this super complicated fill when you've only just been working on triplets. Okay? You build up the speed, you build up that endurance, and then it becomes, accents around the drums, only using triplets. Only using triplets. If you're sitting there in the triplet world and then you want your doubles to be screaming, do them super slow. You know, around the drums, then work on those accents. Right? Flipping those. And then you translate it to other drums. It just kind of opens up this world. Now, that sounds really fast and complicated, and I get that. It's only because I've set a metronome, I've learned those slow, and I've just built up that endurance. Especially with my foot, I mean, it took me forever to get those, to get to those fast doubles, and they're not even as fast as I'd like them to be. But it's just setting that metronome, setting that time, and building up that endurance. Like anything, I mean, anything we do in life, that's kind of how the Lord has designed it. You know, you work at it and kind of build that muscle. Yeah.
Yeah, just a quick question about metronomes. What do you use when you're playing the drum set? Your metronome, to view your drum set and metronome, do you really use just an example of your metronome?
There's two things I do. I do use a pad, like when I'm going through like rudiments and just hand exercises. Like if you guys were to get that stick control book and go through it, you set your metronome to 90 beats per minute, 100 beats per minute, 120 beats per minute, and you just literally go 12 times each, number one, number two, number three, number four, you go all the way down. You could do that on a practice pad, and that would be excellent for your hands. And then when I'm playing around the drums with a metronome, I mean, I typically just put earbuds in and use a metronome app and then just jam to that. Yeah. I use an app called Tempo. It's really great. You can create set lists. I mean, there's hundreds of metronome apps. But it's called Tempo and I really like it. Yeah, that's what I use for metronome. Yeah. Any questions? Any other questions? Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I think I just coming from that jazz world, my teacher did that. He used a traditional grip, and For a lot of ghost notes and like comping while someone's soloing, I found like I just felt cool holding the stick that way, and doing a lot of comping that way. And a lot of the guys comping is for those of you not familiar is like when a soloist is playing and you're playing off what they're playing. You're kind of highlighting a line or a hook that they did. And I kind of learned both ways. When I got down to Los Angeles and I was studying at Cal State Northridge, they were doing a lot of match grip stuff. And I mean, traditional grip is not, I mean, today it's not super applicable because our drums aren't, you know, super tilted. And then there's two types of camps on that. But I when I'm doing a lot of power stuff, I love the match grip because I, you know, can get that rim shot. Unless I angled the snare drum, I couldn't kind of achieve that rim shot. It just is weird on your wrist. But for those of you who aren't familiar, he's talking about this grip versus this grip. So a lot of kind of subtle ghost note stuff, I just we'll go to this. have to bend down to get that rim shot. And I like that for every beat. It's just kind of out of the rock camp that I just really love that. So I feel like I'm getting a lot more strength out of my wrist and, you know, pushing it that way. That's a, yeah, but good question. A really good question. Yeah. Right.
And if it is a more sensitive room, you think, okay, do I try to play rim shots quieter, or do I just settle down the head? You know, what are kind of your thoughts on which
that's a really good question. I think it's kind of a context issue of how loud you can actually be. At the same time, I do a lot of studio work, and unless your snare drum is really dialed in for rim shots, a lot of studios will want you to just live in the center of the drum because you're going to get more consistency. And, you know, that's what they're looking for on records, are just that consistent bop every time, you know. And sometimes the rim shot, you know, is not always consistent unless, you know, you really dial it. But I think it's just reading the room, how loud you can really be, you know. But, I mean, you can sit here and get as much strength and dynamic as you could with a rim shot, you know. Maybe that's not your room. Maybe the intensity is here. You know, but what it's not is, you know, you can get into, you can build intensity just with your body, you know, just with how you're holding the sticks, how you're playing, you know, it can be as intense here. Or it can kind of like, you know, so it's really just all how you are approaching every note and kind of laying into that, you know, really also laying into it to a backbeat. And yeah. Yeah, good question too. You can't. Yeah, you can't. You know, electronic drums are just such a funny thing, you know. And I could say 100 things on that. At the end of the day, you know, you're serving your church and their needs. And, you know, it's not all about us. It's not about all about the drummer and what we're doing. And you can't achieve dynamics on drums, which is the biggest problem of electronic drums, you know, because it removes all subtlety and, you know, it's taking a volume pedal away from a guitar player. It's taking all of their volume knobs and tone knobs away from them. You know, they would make a fuss about it. So there isn't a, you know, that's what's so beautiful about the drums. That's what's so wonderful. Even as expressing that there, you can't get those sort of accents, that sort of dynamic range. But you can practice accents and practice dynamic range. I mean, just in range of motion. And even as I was explaining those triplets, I mean, you can practice, you know, up and down. You know? But yeah, unfortunately, no, you can't. I mean, there's nothing you can do. Yeah. 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 Right, that's a really good question. I think, first of all, they're so expensive. They're super expensive to get the good ones. And to get a nice, I mean, you can get a good Alesis one, for cheaper. And I know Yamaha makes one, but it's as expensive as like the Roland SX. Sorry. I think what I've kind of noticed is service to service, I didn't really get like the bang for the buck, as you would say. Like, maybe I'm using it on a first verse, you know? If it was a very, like, integral part of your set, and it was song by song, and you felt like you were adding a lot of things with it, then I would say, yeah, absolutely. But most sets, unless you're triggering a loop, you know, which is helpful, but then somehow everyone's staying on to that loop, whether you have click in your ears or you can hear it really hot. You can also do multi-tracks, like, on the thing. Again, you're messing with tempo, you know? So it's like, it's this really weird thing of, like, it can be super useful if that is the headspace that all your guys are in. And, like, yeah, let's put a loop on three of the five that we're doing, or three of the six, or let's trigger these tones, you know. If it's, what I've noticed sometimes is I'll pull it in, I'll set it up, because I have the new one, and I love it. It's amazing. But I'll pull it in, and it'll just sit there, nice and pretty, like, and expensive. And, like, I'll try to go to it for first verse, and it just, like, sounds cheesy, because it's so different than my drums. Again, I'm not saying that it sounds cheesy. In my context, it's like, you know, it's like bubbly pop, and I don't have any loops or triggers or anything. I'm just talking like a dry drum, you know, the dry pads with the pre-things. But if your church is like, no, let's load this thing up with samples and loops, and then yeah. Yeah, totally. Oh, no, I think it enhances it. Because, I mean, you can get really killing tones and upload them in there. You know, you can do, I mean, there's tons of options with it. It's really just on the back end, like, okay, what do we want to upload into this thing, you know? And then it becomes a volume thing with your sound guy of, like, you're playing at one level, and then you go to the pad, and it's, you know, you're striking it, and it's like not as hot as your drums are. So there's just this, just kind of a hybrid world. Yeah. Yeah.
What are you using? Do you have a click? Do you have a loop going on? What are you using?
No clicks, no loop. Yeah. We were going to set up a click channel, but it just was kind of like we ran out of time, and so we haven't been using any click. I love playing with click. I love playing to click. I don't really like playing to tracks. I'm fine playing to tracks, but I think sometimes it can limit the, you know, you get to the end of the song and it's a panic to get into the next song of, like, you know, there's real no space to sit and process and to, But yeah, we're not using anything. We might use something tomorrow night with Dustin, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. Oh,
just you having the click. Yeah, I think I come from the camp that the drummer should have the click and be keeping everyone one on and together. And that also puts a lot of pressure on the drummer, because there are sections, as you've heard, where I'm not playing, I'm out completely. But the lead needs something to keep on, you know. So if the click is hot in my ears and I'm playing and we get to a bridge where I'm not playing, I will literally spell out time. So something that's going to keep them, you know, on. I think putting click for the whole band is just, it's like a train wreck waiting to happen, I feel like. Because in my opinion, everybody's kind of interpreting that click different. Some people are ahead of it, whether they want to or not. Some people are behind, especially acoustic guitar players, if they're playing rhythm, you know, and they're playing literally 16th notes, you know. That's when it gets like, they have a tendency to push, and sometimes bass players want to sit back, so they're on the back end of the beat, and then everybody interprets it differently, and a worship leader will nine times out of ten, he will be on the front end of the beat, because he's anticipating lyrics, so he's just naturally going to, you know, bring that excitement. So I think if you're gonna do click, which is really needs to be thought out of why and how to achieve that, I would run 5 rehearsals with click, and I wouldn't pull it into your main service. Give it like 4 rehearsals, 5 rehearsals. Wow, this is feeling amazing. Let's do this for the main service. I think everyone's getting more comfortable with the idea of, all right, we have something holding us, you know? But the great question. Yeah. I killed the shield. I killed the shield man. I'm free range. No, free range. I love that. It's so great. Yeah. I think you know, it's a sound man, it's a mixer thing, you know, and if there's a relationship there, I want to kind of present my case of let's do our best to keep the shield off. Because the misconception is the shield is dampening the immediate stage volume that we're hearing. That's the misconception. It's actually enhancing the sound, because now the sound is bouncing in front of you, it's hitting behind you, and then it's heading out. You know, we have a huge cloth screen behind me, so that would eat up some of the sound, but I've seen this like a dime a dozen. If you're going to go like shield route, completely in case, like I'm talking like aquarium in case, where the drummer and then pads all around, 360 shield, roof, literally door entrance, bathroom, kitchen, you know, I mean, at that point might as well just like tell them to go home. Yeah, but that's like the most practical use for it, because now you're saying we're only going to get mic volume and we're going to put mic volume out. That's why they put an amp in another room and then they mic the amp and then they're just getting the mic that they can turn up and down. But the churches that meet in like gymnasiums and schools, and they just go, oh, the drums are way too loud, let's put plexiglass in front of them. It's like, you know, when you want to make your phone louder, you cup your hand, you know, or you put it in a cup, or you put it, that's what you're doing. You're enhancing the sound when you think that you're diminishing the sound. You know, so nothing really changed from this year, but the sound guy and I just have a relationship of, let's do our best. Like, we're matching, my drums are matching stage volume and output volume of the speakers. And you can tell me any time of the day, can you play quieter? And I will always say absolutely. Yes, 100%. Because that's so much better than trapping me behind a screen. You know? Even, and this might be dangerous to say, so I want you to know my heart, but even on a worship corporate level, it like says something of like, you have no control, let's put this barrier between us, you know? And I just think as drummers, you know, our responsibility obviously is to serve our body and to be humble and to to glorify the Lord through serving our body. But there is something to be said of, hey, we're interacting. I mean, there's not a screen in front of me. We're talking. We're having a conversation. You can see me as I'm processing the lyrics as much as I can look out and see you processing the lyrics. And so I think it's a conversation between you and your sound guy. I think it's like, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent. Like, yeah. Yeah. No. No, because, you know, drums are so funny and super hard to figure out tune-wise. It changes from company to company, which is also really hard too. But just as an example, those Yamahas that are on stage, the bottoms want to be cranked. And the tops want to be looser because they're small, punchy, real vibrant drums, those Yamahas. So bottoms want to be cranked, tops want to be not as cranked, kind of loosely tightened. Big drums, you know, with coated heads, and they're real fat drums, big bass drums, big toms, they want to be kind of looser bottom and more of a cranked top, because you would never take a ginormous drum and just crank it to the max. You want to give it, it needs some of that body, you know. But yeah, you want to, I would tune them probably differently. Generally I crank, if it's a piccolo snare like this guy and it's small, I crank top and bottom. Because you're getting a crack out of it. You're not really getting tone out of these small drums. You're just getting a nice crack out of it. So I'm just getting it really high. Like a bigger, fatter drum, like a 6x5, like a Black Beauty, or a heavier drum, those are just bears to tune because they have so many overtones. You know, yeah, so many overtones. But briefly on tuning, because I get asked this every year, just a good principle of tuning is loosen all, bottom heads are typically okay, but to tune a top head, loosen all the lugs, put the head on, finger tighten all the lugs, okay, and then take two keys and do even turns on both sides. Does that make sense? So quarter turn, and then go in like a counterclockwise or clockwise way. Here, quarter turn, here, quarter turn, because we're trying to get an even balance around the head. Does that make sense? Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's awesome. Well, simplifying is always a good thing, always a good thing. But it becomes tricky when, you know, our first responsibilities as drummers are to keep time, and then our second responsibility is to worship. Because obviously, your heart is there, and your motive is you want to check. But it does no one any good for you to be singing and engaging, and the tempo's skyrocketing. You know, it's not helpful, because your main job, is timekeeper. You know, so if you're keeping time, and it's staying, and you can sing along with that, I think that's more than helpful. I think it communicates to the people that are in your congregation that, hey, I'm here with you. I'm singing alongside. I'm responding the same way that you are. And it even more, hopefully, Lord willing, takes the focus off of what you're doing and more onto what you're saying, what you're singing. You know, It's wonderful to see how people respond to lyrics differently, and you know, and we're as much a part of that as they are. But simplifying, yeah, totally. But you don't want it to be distracting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great question. Back to the first part of that point in the outline is if you have the opportunity to get cymbals, say your church says, hey, this is in the budget to get cymbals, depending on how big your church is and what they think about volume, stage volume, and all that, it's always a safe bet to get dark cymbals, dark hammered cymbals. A lot of Turkish cymbals do that. I use TRXs, which are typically, you know, like these, like this is a hand-hammered cymbal. So, you know, we're just banging on this with a hammer, and then what you get is cymbal volume. It's funny. It's like cymbal volume is not, people think that they're abrasive because they're loud. But it's not necessarily because they're loud, it's the overtones. It's what tone is hitting you. You know, it's like, our church uses an organ every Sunday. And this organ is loud. But people don't think it's loud because it's an organ. And the overtones aren't piercing, you know? It's like a child's scream, too. It's like, if it's a lower pitch, it's not as abrasive, it's a high pitch. So we're thinking about pitch and then volume. So if you can lower the pitch, it doesn't have that abrasive, that thing that's hitting the mic, high frequency, yep, that's hitting the mic, yeah. So even these, we're getting a low, as opposed to even this one.
Oh yeah. This. Oh no. Yeah.
So that's that clanging cymbal that Scripture talks about. No. So, and this is a great symbol. It's just the context. See, our context is, it's not rock and roll. You know what I mean? It's like, you can be loud and, you know, there's probably rock, pop elements in your music, but it's not, that's not the goal, you know? So there's a big difference. Now, this is a ride, but I have a crash here. Yeah, a little bit. And now they're big, but see, this is a dark, anything warm, anything hand hammered is really helpful. And that's another. Even that is a lot.
Do you tighten down any belt extra on there?
Just tighten it to hold the cymbal. But you can hear the frequency difference in these cymbals. I mean. You know, it's very different, just tonally. And then on top of that, for you church drummers, there's really no reason ever to ride your crash cymbals. It'll make your church happier. It'll make, you know, I mean, the only place we really, like, see that are, you know, in big, epic rock. I mean, I'll crash this ride, as you've noticed, and I'm hitting it really hard, but it's not abrasive, you know. It's not that pinging frequency that you're just landing onto. Right. Yes. Exactly. So all these cymbals are really warm. These hi-hats are really dark. They're bright. In hi-hat terms, means they're crisp, really crisp, and they're at a higher frequency. but I'm rarely here. If I'm really laying in, I'm more. See how I can literally change the pitch of the cymbal? So, no need to be riding crashes and no need to be sloshing, you know, hats. Which, again, will serve the body. So if you can get cymbals, I'd get something like hand hammered or dark. Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, especially those really dry ones. Yeah, really dry cymbals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's just because of, again, from the jazz world, of wanting to get that hi-hat crispness. Sometimes when it's just, she's talking about when the hi-hat is even like this, you're getting, you're kind of some, when you're up and down, you're getting kind of like a wong, like a whoa sound. When you angle it, you're getting more of that crunch, of that crisp. And you can hear them, they're already touching, you can hear that. But that's just from jazz, that 2 and 4. Just wanting that to be nice and loud. Yeah. Yeah.
What are, you know, pretty frequently in modern worship music, we'll encounter sections of the song where we can't play a backbeat yet. Maybe like it's a first chorus.
Mm. Yeah, so it's not necessarily here yet, but maybe it's a first verse. I think something that sounds really moody is when you take your hi-hat hand and you put it on the floor tom. So you're not laying into that backbeat yet, but it's... Maybe you're hitting that backbeat on the floor, or it's coming from here. It's just another creative way of, instead of staying here, you know, it's building some of that intensity, what you want, and that sort of anticipation, too, that you want. You know, again, it's like so many creative ways of changing up what we do on our first verse, on our first chorus. You know, sometimes our first verse go-to every time is we have the intro. First verse is coming. You know, same thing you did. You can totally change that by just one small tweak. Like, see, we moved our hi-hat hand to the floor tom. You can move this hi-hat hand to the rim. And now you get this super cool, like, hybrid thing. Even hookier, take the kick out. Maybe just downbeats. And then when we get to the chorus, it sounds so much cooler. Now that kick is back in. So it's, again, moving what you would typically do, moving that around the drums. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are marimba mallets from my classical days that just sound really great on a cymbal. I don't know. Again, these cymbals are really great in terms of just overtones. They carry for a long time. I mean, I only have to hit this a couple times for that to really loop itself. And then the sizzle, it does all the work for me, you know. Those are just 16th notes. 1 E and a, 2 E and a, 3 E and a, 4 E and a. But it's creating this wash, right? Make sense? Cool. Yeah, great. Yeah. 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 Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Really. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, it's that's a really great question. Right. Yeah.
So how do you deal with, like, who tells the bass player?
Yeah. No, that's a really great question. I think how I would answer this is it depends on do you listen and is the bass player listening? So, you know, there's guys that don't listen. They're in their own world, and they're going to do their own thing, and there's nothing you can do. And in my church context, I play with a piano player who is all over the map. And someone said about him, there's not a key he doesn't like. Speaking of note, there's not a note he doesn't like, which is just another way of saying he's incredibly busy. In that context, I can take sideline because I'm not going to change him. It's a funny thing of like when you have musicians that you can interact with, that just comes naturally. Man, I'll lay out and then you take that and I heard what you did and I'm going to riff on what you did. So if that's kind of the spirit of your band, which as drummers and musicians, you can address, hey, are we listening to each other? I feel like I'm playing on top of what you're doing, and, you know, you don't want to, again, I'll be careful, you do have a voice in the band to say, that sounds like it's going in a different way, I don't know about that, you know, so you want to communicate, but at the same time, if they're not going to listen, you can't change them. There's nothing you can do. So if it's a bass player who just, like, strapped on the bass and is doing their thing and doesn't care about your kick pattern, doesn't care about where you're landing, is just like, I'm right here, and I would just kind of take the sideline and go, well, you can't change a person who's not going to listen. But you can communicate with your band of like, hey, how are we listening to one another? You know? Even with Ryan, sometimes even Ryan and I will say, it's kind of rarer these days, but even we'll say like, hey, take the fill on the second verse. I'll take the fill on the first verse. And that's just the intro into the fill into the chorus, basically. You know? So that's that type of open communication. But typically in our context, I'm setting a groove and Ryan's playing in that kick pattern. And then he's kind of filling around that kick pattern. But it really is coming down to the basics of what that is. But so that's the only way I'd answer that question. I hope that's helpful. Yeah. Totally, yeah. There's two ways of doing that, I think. First way is you just simplify your kick pattern in rehearsals, in the main service. If you have time, you meet 20 minutes before the service. You run kick patterns. You run bass parts. Hey, can you match this? I think if you're pulling up these bass players, I think it'll excite them to play a busier pattern. I think they'll love that, you know. Especially if it doesn't feel like you're saying like, "Hey, keep up," but you're working together. There's also a secondary thing you can do if they're cool with it, which would be, what are the main beats that we need to hit together, and then can we kind of play around those? Can you play, as a drummer, can you play around those main beats? Maybe the main beat is, and you just want him to lay right there. Just hit those, you know? 1, 2, and 3, 4. And maybe your kick pattern, if he feels comfortable there, is, it doesn't distract from what he's doing, and it's not tripping him out either, you know, where it's not like a real offbeat, heavy, confusing thing. But you can still stay interesting while he's playing, you know, the main hook, we'll call it. Totally. I went to a church and was sitting in with a band, with a percussionist, and like, it was one of those guys where it was his life. Like, ponytail. Yeah. Like, it was his life. Like, his existence was, I mean, the stuff he had was like, you know, the bells and whistles, literally. And again, it was one of those things where, we just had to like talk after the rehearsal. And I just said like, man, I think I'm playing on top of you. When it was probably the opposite, but it was like, oh, I don't think you're playing on top of me. Like, maybe I can ease off the throttle. And outwardly, I'm saying, yeah, let's work together. Like, let's pick our places that we can interact. Inside, I'm saying, like, yeah, ease off. Literally pack up half of your equipment. He has, like, stones from, like, the Great Wall of China that somehow he's gonna channel some sort of percussive god of the Far East. You know, it's like, so
in
that context, I'm not tricking him. But in that context, it's just like, okay, this is obviously distracting. This is obviously a problem. You know, and the thing about percussionists, man, is if when you see a good one, like a great one, you're like, wow, that's totally what that should sound like. Like Snarky Puppy, for example. It's like when you hear that percussionist, he's like one of my favorite band members. Because just watch, like when you watch a live show, just watch him. Like he just picks his moments. And he's out. You know, because he's enhancing what the drummer is doing, you know. So some percussionists, when you're laying into a thing, they have like this samba, like Latin thing that they think is sounding good over the main groove. So it's like. You know what I mean? And it's just like, in my ears, I'm like, what did I do? You know? So, I don't want to dog percussionists. I think it's awesome. I think, again, it's just this spirit of, are we working together? Are we working against each other? You know? And everybody has a voice. Not speaking, everybody has an opinion and a voice. You know, when we go to church, these are the people that we're serving alongside, and we want to encourage each other, and we want to edify each other. But, you know, we want to be honest with each other and say, like, hey, this could be distracting, or am I doing anything that's distracting from what you're doing, and how can we work together? And when we had that conversation, when we finally got to the show, it was great he picked his moments because they were planned out. You know, like verse 2 is yours, I'm going to lay back. So if verse 1, I'm here. No, that's too much. If verse 1, I'm here, like. And maybe he's on a shaker or a tambourine, and then he wants to do something bongo or djembe verse 2. I literally might ease up to the point of like. What I'm doing is still funky, but it's out of the way of what he's doing. And not much has changed. It's just given him, hey, you take V2, and then chorus, we'll play together. If I'm doing 16th notes, don't do 16th notes on the tambourine. If you're doing 16th notes on the tambourine, all go to quarters or eighths, right? Second chorus. Because he's taking the 16th, you know, he's taking the 16th line. It's like two bad electric guitar players playing at the same time, too. You know? It's like, this is my lick, this is my lick, this is, you know. When they're interacting, it's like beautiful. It's like how it's supposed to be, you know? So, again, long version of what. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Practicing those, counting those, definitely practicing those. Especially the one we did that they just introduced on their newest record, which is in 3, but the groove is. You know. Which is complicated. It's like, I think it's just practicing those things and literally counting those things out loud. And then if you saw my sheet music, it literally had 4 bar, and I counted 1, 2, 3, 4. Because I wasn't familiar with the song. So it's like a 3 bar into a 4 bar. It's like. So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. And when we were doing it as the band, there was some like miscommunication of, is that really a 4 bar? And so I literally spelled it out on the drums when that 4 bar came. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, like, here's where the beats are, you know. So it's just something that you work on. You shed by yourself, you know, or you listen to it. You play to it, you know, and you listen to it. But really, it comes, in my mind, sometimes it just comes down to counting it while you're doing it, you know. Which, again, can be distracting, but that's our job to keep it. And then make it really obvious for everybody, you know. If the verse is bouncing from 3 to 4 to 3 to 4, and then the chorus is in 4, it's like that can kind of be jolting. Give them an obvious 4-bar, you know, like... It's like clearly this is, we're back and forth, you know. You're spelling out those eighth notes, you know. But yeah, good question. Yeah. Just lead sheets. Yeah, just lead sheets. But in my job, sometimes I'll get a call and, hey, you need to learn these 10 songs, you know, by tomorrow night. In that context, I'm literally on staff paper writing out the groove of what the drummer did or whatever. And really, it's just breaking it down to where do the 16th notes land. You know, 16th notes are the subdivision. So for all of us, that's really important to know, to remember. If you're trying to figure something out, or if you're trying to be more creative in your playing, 16th notes are the bottom level. If you can count 16th notes, you can come up with any pattern. So 1 E and a, 2 E and a, 3 E and a, 4 E and a. And that is where a lot of those complicated offbeats and groove patterns come from, are just pure 16th notes. And if you know where those sit, you can do so much with that. Like, for example, really quick, something we looked at yesterday. Turn in your packets if you're able. Also, I'm probably just going to talk. So if you guys need to leave, feel free to do that. I will not be offended at all. 16th note-wise, hey, look at page, I think it's 10. Oh, no, wait. It's not 10, I lied. Where did that go, guys? Yeah, that's really good. It is 10, I was right, 10. So look at 10, okay? Is everybody familiar with what a paradiddle is? Paradiddle. Right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left. These are 16th notes. 1 E and a, 2 E and a, 3 E and a, 4 E and a. Right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left. Or you can remember it this way. Paradiddle, paradiddle. Okay? So in drumming, we have singles, doubles, and paradiddles. Alternating are singles. Doubles are obviously doubling. Right, right, left, left. And then paradiddles are right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left. This is just a really awesome way to locate and write out 16th notes in a groove pattern. Okay, so we're using a paradiddle pattern. And we're doing it twice, okay? So everybody should be looking at page 10, number 1. The kick drum is on all 4 beats. 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay, and then we're doing 2 sets of paradiddles with our hands between the hi-hat and the snare drum. Right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left, excuse me. Right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left. Does that make sense? And how you count that out, right, again, is 1 E and a, 2 E and a, 3 E and 4 E and It's just a really great pattern to figure out 16th notes. Quicker, it sounds like this. Make sense? And what the coolest thing that happens with it is they move it over to the E. Okay, right? So we have one E and a. Now we're moving it over to the E, the accent. We're moving the accent from one to the E on number two. And then we move the accent to the and on number three. And then we move it to the on number four. When I say like E and a, does that make sense? Okay. All right. One E and a, right? So one E and a. And this is what number two sounds like, moving it over one accent. Make sense? It's just filthy. Okay, so number three, we're moving it to the and. And. Number four, it goes to the You put them all together. Right? Yeah, so, thank you. So basically, it's just that's an awesome exercise in locating accents on each 16th note, okay? So it's like, you may not play this groove on a Sunday morning, but what it is teaching you to do is to locate where each one of those accents are. E and maybe those become hits in your drumming. So right now we're taking our fills to an even greater level. Remember, our subdivisions are 16th notes. 1 E and a 2 E and a 3 E and a 4 E and a 1 E and a 2 E. Does that make sense? That's the lowest common denominator. E and a 4 E and a. Those are the 16th notes. And you can hear me kind of, I reference some of them, right? 1 E and a 2 E, 4 E. And E. It's opening up, if we're playing with 16th notes, it's opening up these really awesome hitting moments, these sort of jolting, like, you know, offbeat moments. E and E and E and That's just one E and one E and two E and three E and four E and So when your fills are starting on downbeats, now you can use these offbeats, right? So it's like our downbeat fills. You know? Again, all using exercises that we have in front of us to kind of expand our palate. Really quick, before we kind of run out of time and we kind of go to our next location. I've kind of this packet. You can do it on your own. It's really self-explanatory. It's just gritting it up and doing it really slow as you go through it, but if you do have any questions at all, if you go to the back of your packet, these are some excellent resources. Any of these books are self-explanatory. You don't have to get a teacher. You don't have to go on YouTube. You can literally sit down on a practice pad and go through these exercises on your own. These resources are great. You can find them on Amazon. You can find them really cheap. I would buy these books. I would definitely buy Stick Control as soon as possible and just start going through it. It'll get your time up. If you do have any questions about this packet, if you have any questions or things that that happened during this weekend, or any questions in general, church-related or drumming-related, please, please, like, do not hesitate to email me on this email. I want to be helpful as much as I can to serve you guys so that you can better serve your congregations. Let's be excellent for the glory of God together and continue to push one another to excellence. All right? Thanks for hanging out, guys.